much.
Recording has started.
Fantastic. Thanks, Carrie. Well, welcome, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. And welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group call on the 17th of September of 2018. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call. We do have quite a few participants online. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So I know we have quite a few on the audio bridge today due to the audio issues. If you're only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now?
Sarah Langstone from VeriSign.
Thank you so much, Sarah. We will note that. All right, and as a reminder to all participants as well, if you would please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will hand the meeting over to Jeff Newman. Please begin.
Thanks, Michelle, and welcome, everyone. I noticed that we're still having some technical issues with the 1-800 number for people dialing in the U.S. I had to dial in a couple times because of the static I got the first few times, but I guess it seemed to work. But if anyone's still hearing static, please let us know. Our agenda is, as usual, published on, we sent it around on Friday, and it's up on the screen if you're in Adobe. So for those on the phone, we'll start out with, as normal, with any updates to statements of interest. Then the main items are for discussion of, or continuing the discussion of SAC 90, the paper. And then we'll talk a little bit about a call for volunteers on the initial report, public comment review, which we also started to discuss last week, along with a substantive review of Section 1.5 of the supplemental report, which was sent around about a week and a half ago now, almost 2 weeks ago. And then we'll start a second, if we have time, a second review of some of the sections that have been resent around based on comments that were received in the last couple weeks. To address a quick comment, I think that Christopher made in the chat early on that the there is an upcoming deadline of September 26th, but that is for the initial report itself, comments to the initial report, not necessarily for comments on the sections that we've been discussing, although it is our goal to get out an initial report for comment to the public by or around the October 12th time frame, somewhere around that time, so it's released before ICANN 63 in Barcelona. So, Christopher, to answer your question, comments are not due by the 26th on these five topics that we've been discussing for the supplemental report, although the sooner you can get in comments on these items, the better. Okay, with that said, are there any questions or comments on the agenda? Okay, I'm not seeing any comments or hands raised. So why don't we ask for any updates to statements of interest? Okay, not seeing any or hearing any. Then we can go on to the next substantive item, which is a discussion on SAC 90. I may say SAC all the time because I get confused as to why they go with just the SAC 90 instead of SSAC 90, but that's just my inability to remember. But that said, I know it's on Adobe right now. It's really small. We did send this around to the entire group, this chart, via email on, I think it was around September 11th or so. And so it should be in your email. And as Steve says, you can download a copy from that that wiki link as well. I am also going to turn to a PDF copy that I have. So Cheryl and Steve, if you can just keep a lookout for the chat on the chat to see if there's anyone that has a comment that I might miss. So the focus of this chart is to take the advice that's provided in SAC 90 and to look at, first to describe what it was in the advice, a little bit of background, and then the rationale. But really what I want to pay attention to for our purposes are the last three columns, which are entitled, does the subpro currently address? And then if we do, then how? And then really the last column, which is what else do we need to do on this particular area of advice? So, for example, if you look at the first period, the first thing of advice item, the first one says, recommendation one, the SAC recommends that the ICANN Board of Directors take appropriate steps to establish definitive and unambiguous criteria for determining whether or not a syntactically valid domain name label could be a top-level domain in the global DNS. Our understanding of that issue is helped by a background that was provided by the IETF Special Use Domain Name RFC 6761, which was published in 2013, which called for the development of a list to reserve names for that have been reserved by the IETF, and the board accepted that advice. And the question is, have we already addressed this in our initial report? And we believe that we have addressed that. And at this point, the only work that's left to be done is really just to evaluate the comments when they come in. But it's addressed in 2.7.1 of our initial report, talking about making sure that special use domain names are continued to be reserved, and that we also add a couple names that were identified on the PTI list. Any questions on that first one?
Hey, Jeff. Sorry. Not sure if we're...
Yeah, no, please. Jim, please. That's okay.
Thanks, Jeff. So, Jim Prendergast, for the record. In does subpro currently address? I think addressing something is one measurement of the work that we've done. But in some instances, there's a lot of holes on what has actually been completed. So we may have addressed it, but there's still, I think, in some areas some outstanding, not necessarily about this, but this is a general statement overall. It seems like there's future work or outreach that we're waiting on that hasn't been completed yet. So we may have addressed it, but in some instances, we may not have completed the work either.
Thanks, Jim. This is Jeff. And I would agree with you on that. And I think that's the purpose of the last column, I think, on this chart. So if we have we may say that we've addressed it in our initial report, but then in that last column with what other work needs to be done, I think we need to make sure that we capture that in that last column. So on this particular item, I think we have captured it. But as we go through the remaining items in the chart, I think we definitely need to be kept honest and to make sure that we have covered it. And if not, or if there's still work to be done, then to indicate that in that last column.
Jeff Sherrill here. That's very much why we sent this out after our last call when we went through SAC 90. Because it's that last column in particular that we want to make sure we've captured and haven't overlooked anything that still needs to be done. But obviously, if there's anything we haven't articulated accurately in column H, let us know as well. But it is that column I that we want you to pay really close attention to today. Thanks. Back to you, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Cheryl. And you'll see with this second recommendation that we think we've partially addressed it, but we know that there's more work to do, and that's indicated in that last column. So the second recommendation, which is fairly lengthy, but in just to summarize, that they want all of the lists and everything that we produce and all the, I'm trying to generalize this, but everything to be reflected in the applicant guidebook. So there's just to go to the end of that or the middle of that first paragraph, it says the IETF has placed a small number of potential GTLD strings into a special use domain names registry as described in 6761. A string that is placed into this registry is expected to be processed in a defined special way that's different from the normal process of DNS resolution. Should ICANN formalize in policy the status of the names on these lists? If so, how should ICANN respond to changes? How should ICANN respond to a change that occurs in the middle of a round, and so on? And then if you look at the question of, I just lost my space here, trying to reduce the size of this, actually trying to increase the size of it in some cases. So on this one, the board accepted the advice. The GNSO is responsible for this, and then we have this one down as partially addressed. So what we say is, regarding part one of the recommendation, the policy development process has agreed that special use domain names that are established through the IETF process should be reserved. But regarding part two, that it should be limited in scope. And we're not aware of any other, we're not aware of any other lists or any other names that would require similar exclusion. We have said that regarding home, corp, and mail, those are out of scope of this particular PDP because they were applied for in that first round. And then in the course of deliberations on name collisions in Section 2.7.8, we do look at SX. We do take SAC 90 into account, but we have not at this stage formally recognized the concept of private use domains, though we did ask for better guidance on name collision, and that we support the efforts to develop a data-driven do-not-apply list, which would seek to prevent names that represent a similar level of risk as home, corp, and mail. And then Rubens has added a thing in this chart that says, regarding part three, the PDP considers it out of scope because this is future-looking. And I'm just trying to figure out what the exact edit was on this one. So if, it looks pretty similar here to what was in there. I don't know if Rubens is on this list that wants to explain the difference in that. All right. Rubens, please.
Thanks, Jeff. Can you hear me?
Yep. Sure. Go on.
Right. I mentioned that while our PDP is 99.9% forward-looking, we do have two issues that we are that we have in our charter that refer to the 2012 round. One is that we were called to look into closer generics for 2012 round. The other is that you also have in our charter to look into collisions into legacy GTLDs, which goes back to since GTLDs existed, not even only to the 2012 round. So we do have two small items that are not forward-looking, but besides those two, we don't have any mandate to go into any other topic. So that still applies for .home, .copy, .mail. We don't have mandate to look into that, and we shouldn't look into that. But we do have some, we do have two items that with this characteristic. The other comment I had is that while .home and .corp are very consensual in the technical community that they are shouldn't that they are pose a very high collision risk. That is not that same unanimity about .mail, which for some people in the technical community would only pose a risk for dotless mail, which isn't allowed anyways in gTLDs to have dotless TLDs. Others think that mail would be a possible risk even for the non-dotless mail. But the question is that this is not something that is an established consensus in the community. So that's why I suggested removing that mail just to not enter into this discussion. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, thanks for that, Ruben. Does anyone have any questions for Ruben on that? Jim, please.
Yes, thanks, Jim. Ruben, it's Jim. I've got some issues with the clarity on the phone. So is there any way for you to just send around via email the suggested edits that you had and sort of the rationale behind them so at least I and others who may not even be on the call can take a look at it as well?
And Rubens is typing, so yes, he said, okay, he'll send the rationale. And on the last column for what work needs to still be done, you'll see that we have, regarding part one, that we may want to consider, or we still have to consider, what to do if there's a change to the special use domain name list during the application window. So certainly if it occurs before the application window, we would incorporate that name onto the reserve named list, but if for whatever reason there's a name that's added during the window or even after a registry is approved but before a contract or even, I guess, after a contract, we would still need to indicate what needs to happen in those circumstances. So we will add that to the comments and make sure that we address it when we are talking about that subject after we get back the comments on the initial report. And I see Christopher Wilkinson, please. Christopher, are you able to speak? Okay, I'm not hearing Christopher. I'm assuming nobody else can either. So why don't I go to Jim, and then we'll see if we can work out the issues with Christopher's line. So, Jim, please.
Okay.
Hi, is that any better?
There he is.
There you go. Yes, Christopher, thanks. Please go ahead, Christopher.
Sorry about that. Just a brief marker about reserve names. That word has two distinct meanings in this context. For the sake of argument today, I have absolutely no problem with the general proposition that the IETF technical reservation should be respected. But my experience with geographical names is that in the event of a large geographical top-level domain, there will be requests for really quite large numbers of reserved names in the sense that they will only be delegated to authorized participants. The best example, take .massachusetts, Cambridge.massachusetts, Harvard.massachusetts, Boston.massachusetts, all those will have to be reserved by the registry for the purposes of those names. This is an entirely different concept to the one that the ITF has used, and almost to the point that it would be quite helpful if we could find a different name for it. But it will be big. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Christopher. Without getting into a discussion on geographic names, let's not delve into that right now, but the point about this is more of a do not apply list. So we're using it in that sense. So I take the point that you can reserve things for different purposes, but this particular one is, at least in the initial report, as a do not apply list, which is why we need to consider things of what happens if there is an application and a special use domain is put on the list by the IETF during the application window. Jim, please.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Jim Prendergast. So I was trying to match all this. It was kind of tough. I printed the document out and I had a migraine after reading through it. But one thing I would suggest that we do in an attempt to not have the quote-unquote homework turned back to us for being incomplete is in column B, there are very specific questions that the SSAC is posing to the ICANN Board of Directors, which has then funneled them down to us. And what I'm specifically talking about is like the second paragraph, should ICANN formalize in policy the status of the names of on these lists, if so, and then a whole series of sub-questions. I think it would really behoove us to somehow, you know, whether it's in the final report, the initial report, or a supplementary document, actually take those questions one-on-one and develop specific responses to them so that when it does go back to the board, they see that it's complete, and then when it does go back to the SSAC, they see that we've taken the time to address all these specifically, and it doesn't, you know, get thrown back to us saying, well, you didn't answer these questions. I think that's, it's going to take a little more work, I think, on the front end, but it potentially saves us some delay on the back end. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Jim. I think that's good. We should absolutely, in the wherever we include this response to this, we should absolutely organize it in a fashion, like you said, to make sure that we're answering all of the questions. It's also hard if you're reading it in the Adobe room to see all the questions because I think there's a cutoff. So you actually have to look at the document within a PDF copy that was sent out in email or to go on to that link. Christopher, your hand is still raised. I don't know if that's old or new. And Jim, you're up again. So, Jim, please.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot why you had me before. Scrolling all the way over to the right, the last item that we have in our column of what else needs to be done, you know, it says, as an overall comment, the PDP working group recognizes there may be some overlap with the NCAP project and welcomes additional clarity. How are we actually going to go about seeking that clarity?
Thanks, Jim. It's you know, we're still, I guess, waiting for the NCAP to the whole project to actually get approved by the board. I'm not even sure where it is at this stage. I know that there was a session at the last ICANN meeting where they addressed the comments. I'm not aware of any development since the last ICANN meeting. So I guess this is probably a good question for us to put in our discussions for Barcelona, at least to make sure that we can liaise with that group to figure out where they are and what their thinking is. And as Cheryl said, the timeline for that project well exceeds our timeline for our work. So we just need to discuss this issue first with them, and then once we figure out when that does get kicked off, you know, to make sure to get some clarity from the Juniper Council, who probably will need to get some clarity with the ICANN board.
So maybe, so this is Jim again. So maybe what we can do is we can start compiling. I hate to use the term because it gives everybody the shivers, but clarifying questions that maybe we can get to the SAC ahead of Barcelona, so that they have time to think about it, so that we're, you know, they can answer the questions in Barcelona as opposed to having to go back and deliberate once we ask the question in Barcelona.
Thanks, Jim. This is Jeff. I think it's a great idea, and we will start compiling that based on these discussions, and anyone who's got some additional comments that they want to send via email, please do. I guess we need to set a cutoff date for that so we can give the SAC some time to respond. So I would think if we can get some comments by the end of the month, which is actually not that far away, let's set a deadline of the, you know, the end of the month to get these questions compiled and then sent over to the SAC, so hopefully that they can give us some answers by Barcelona. Okay, going into the, it's still in the last column of that same one, on the part two of the recommendations, we, one of the questions we'll have to add to this list is, you know, one of the questions we need to add to ask to the SAC is whether they know of other lists, because they refer to specific, or they refer to the fact that there may be other lists out there that need to be considered, but we don't know if that reference is a hypothetical reference or that they have some things in mind that we should be looking towards at this point. And then regarding number three, which is really the question of whether we took the SAC 90 into consideration during deliberations, and we do believe that we have, and that at this point, other than waiting for the comments to come in, there's nothing else for us to do at this particular point. We look at recommendation three. The recommendation is that SAC recommends that ICANN Board of Directors establish an effective means of collaboration on these issues with relevant groups outside ICANN, including the IETF. The board basically accepted that and said, and the question of whether we address this, we say partially. We certainly have sought input from the technical community, and we have sought information on the name collision topic, especially from the DNS OARC group, the OARC 28 meeting, as well as the IETF domain DNS operations team and RIPE DNS working group mailing lists, though we have not received input from those communities at this point in time. And we have not yet considered what a model would look like for future engagement with the IETF and other technical bodies, and we're not sure if that's within our scope as a working group to do so. Questions on that one? Okay, looking at recommendation four, the recommendation is that the SAC recommends that ICANN complete this work before making any decision to add new TLDs to the global DNS. The board accepted the advice and said that it will ask us to include a recommendation in our work. Have we addressed this? We say yes, that we intend to include recommendations on both the reserve names list and name collisions, all of which would be envisioned to be implemented prior to the launch of subsequent new GTLD procedures. And then other than addressing the comments as they come in, there's nothing in addition that we think we would need to do at this point in time. Jim, please.
Hey, Jeff, thanks. Jim Prendergast. So essentially,
we're acknowledging the recommendation that this should be completed before the next round. Is that correct?
I would answer that in the way of saying that I believe the working group has acknowledged that our recommendations need to be made before the completion of the next round. I think that could be interpreted a number of different ways in terms of, and I think we need to discuss whether completion means that there is a process put into place to handle these issues, especially when you're dealing with things like name collision. But I think, well, let me just, without taking a position, let me just say I think the group needs to define what complete means. Because I think completion can mean different things to different people. So I think it's going to be important that we as a group define what that is.
Right. Yeah, I think it's important, too, for the predictability component that we spend a lot of time on as well. So thanks.
Yep. Thanks, Jim. Okay, Christopher Wilkinson says on the chat, I think it would be desirable for staff to publish a list of all the prerequisites for a new round. I think that might be, Christopher, I'm not sure if it's staff or whether that's the working group that would do that, but I do think that to the extent that this working group is recommending that there are prerequisites, that certainly that should be included in a final report if we do view anything as being prerequisites. So I think that's a good topic for this group to include when we get into the final report and our final recommendations. And Ruben says in the chat, fact is that there already is a framework. If ICANN finds it to be unfit, it could open itself for liability. I'm not going to get into the substance of that comment, but just to say I think that's Ruben's why I think it's going to be important for this group to define what it means to be complete. So it may mean in some circumstances that there's a framework in place and that's complete. For other people, it may mean that complete may mean that the not only there's a framework in place, but all of the everything is put through that framework in order to be deemed complete. So we need to make sure that we're all talking from the same page. So right now, I think as a working group, we will just commit to completing this work, and then we'll have to define what we believe complete means. Okay. Any questions on that before we go over to the call for volunteers? Okay, so thank you for this, and please do submit additional comments if you have it to the chart through email. This is going to be important, especially to develop this list of questions to go to the SAC prior to the ICANN meeting in Barcelona. Again, I'll put a deadline of the end of the month. I should probably be a little bit more specific than the end of the month. So in looking at a calendar, the last non-weekend day of the month is September 28th. So let's set a deadline for the 28th to get in comments and get that out to the FSAC by Monday, October 1st. So comments and questions from the working group by the 28th to help us get that letter out to the FSAC by October 1st, us being the leadership on behalf of the working group. Okay. With that said, let's turn to a little bit different topic, which again we started on the last call. So according to the work plan, it's our proposal that we, once the comments come in September 26th and then they are analyzed, and when I say analyzed, I mean really put into a matrix in these three different areas by ICANN staff, so that we can create three subgroups to look at the public comments, to analyze those public comments, to make recommendations to the full working group of, what additional work may need to be done or what trends have come out of the comments and whether they support the current recommendations, whether they recommend revising the current recommendations or where there were no recommendations if in the initial report, where the subgroups believe recommendations, we have enough information to develop recommendations and to put those forth to the working group. Unlike the, I want to say it again, unlike the initial report, the full working group will actually be discussing the substance of these issues, discussing the recommendations of the subgroups. But it's our hope that the subgroups can do a lot of the analysis to help the full working group discussions and to make those go a lot more quickly and to provide input into those discussions. So the three groups, which are originally named subgroup A, B, and C, divide up the work into three different categories. This was also sent around, I should say, on the, in the email that you got on September 11th, and also is on that link that was just put into the chat. So the three areas are subgroup A, which deals with overarching issues, foundational issues, and pre-launch activities, which is essentially sections 1.2 through 1.4 of that initial report. The co-leads for this group will be myself and Robin. We also have a column in that chart that we sent out last week, which indicates the, where it appears or where it was discussed initially, whether it was in the overarching issues, work track one, which most of them fell into work track one, but there were there was one topic in work track two, one in three, and one topic that was in four. So please take a look at that chart. The second area is the application submission, processing, and evaluation. So that deals with essentially sections 1.5 through 1.7 of the initial report, which delves into issues that were considered by work tracks one, mostly one and two. The geographic names issue is not something that, although it technically falls into section 1.7, that's really deferred out to work track five, and the IGO, INGO protection, while that is in 1.7 as well, that's really taking into consideration the work that's going on in other arena. On the IGO, INGO protections. And then finally, subgroup C deals with the remainder of the initial report, which although has the most amount of topics in it, as far as the pages it deals with from the initial report, it's about the same as the other two. And this set, this group deals with the dispute resolution, or sorry, dispute proceedings, contention resolution, contracting, pre-delegation and post-delegation issues. That last group is going to be led by Cheryl and Michael, and I forgot to mention that subgroup B is being led by Ruben and Krista. So what we're really asking is that the, you know, that within the next 2 weeks or so that you sign up for at least one of these groups. If not, if you, unless you want to do more, you're absolutely welcome to sign up for as many as you'd like. But recognizing that everyone has limited resources, please try to pick the ones that you are most interested in or have the most feedback. And Jim says, how do you sign up? Which is a great question. So Steve, if you can, should we be putting this on a Google Doc and letting people fill in their names? Steve, what would be the method that you would prefer for people to sign up? Please, Steve.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Steve from staff. So I have my thinking, and I'll let Michelle and Andrea correct me if I get this wrong, but you'll see a note on the subgroup pages on the wiki to send a request via email to gnso-sex@secs@icann.org. So ideally, I think we're considering suggesting that you send an email to that address. and we'll get the pages populated with members who sign up or observers as well. So yeah, rather than a Google Doc for self-sign up, I think we prefer to just have it done as we traditionally do by email. So yeah, that's my thinking at least. And then, you know, if Michelle or Andrea think that at the end of it, prefer to have it done a different way, that's fine too. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Steve. So I think a couple things out of that, just to make sure everyone sends an email to that list, whether you want to be a participant or an observer. So this is open to both participants and observers. If you are currently an observer in the full working group, you will need to be a participant. You need to convert over to be a participant in the full working group in order to be a participant in one of the subgroups. If you are currently a participant in the full working group, then you can sign up to be either an observer or a participant in any of the subgroups. Hopefully that makes sense. If not, I can repeat that, or we can put some language when in the sign-up area on that. So, Jim, please.
Thanks, Jeff. Jim Prendergast for the record. So could you, or maybe one of the subgroup co-leads, just give a sense of what sort of the working methods would be like in these subgroups and how frequently would they be meeting and what's expected? And then I'm assuming similar to the work tracks that we had in the previous phase that there wouldn't be conflicts between the three subgroups if people wanted to participate in all three. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. That's a great question, and we're still talking about it with the leadership team, so I'm going to ask if we can have a week or two to get you something formal and written up on the working methods. But just to respond to the last part, yes, because Cheryl and I are probably going to be taking turns, making, you know, just being in all three of the groups, we will not have them conflict with each other. But I think if you give us a week or two, then we can get to you all a working methods document that describes how we will work. But just reading the chat, Ruben says that subgroup B will meet twice a day. I think he's kidding. I'm hoping he's kidding, yeah. So we will come out with those things, with a schedule of meetings, and I think that's a great question. Okay, I think to answer that last part, which I do think is a good question, we will try to engage in the subgroup rotation or the rotation of meetings for the subgroups just as we do for the full working group, regardless of where the leads are located. Okay, so please do. We'll send out another email about sign up, and then we've taken it as an action item to come back to you all with our plans for the working methods of these groups. Okay, great. So now with the remaining time, let's turn to section 1.5 of the supplemental initial report. The preface that we did for the last, the first review of 1.1 through 1.4 applies here. This was a first cut at trying to get this on paper so that you can review it. We are taking comments on the substance of what's in here, as well as the organization or additional questions that you may want us to ask. So please do weigh in, not only on this call, but also on email. And like we have with 1.1 and 1.4, which we may get to talk a little bit about, we will certainly send around shortly the notes from this call, as well as any revisions we think that need to be made to those sections based on the call. So if just to remind everyone what this 1.5 is, and I've never been a huge fan of what we call this as far as the title, but it's Registrar Support for New GTLDs, which is really dealing with what happens in the case where new GTLD registries find it difficult to attract registrars to, for whatever reason, to participate in distributing their TLD. And so on this one, the only relevant policy that we have from the last round in 2012 was that Recommendation 19 said that registries must use only ICANN accredited registrars in registering domain names and may not discriminate among such accredited registrars. And so how is this implemented? So even though this recommendation was agreed to by the GNSO, you did have some comments to that final report in 2007 that indicated, from the registrar perspective, that the registrars recognized the opportunity that new GTLDs presented to it, but that there's cost to implement the new GTLDs, and so that registrars need to determine on its own what new GTLDs it wants to carry and which are appropriate based on the registrar's business model. And the registries, kind of in a little bit opposite direction, said that, you know, they supported this recommendation 19, but that it cautioned that it hasn't always worked for the small specialized GTLDs, and that, you know, there could be an adverse impact on the smaller registries where, you know, they may be at the mercy of registrars who may not, for their own business judgment, determine that they don't want to carry or devote resources to some of these new TLDs. And so they wanted to engage in dialogue on what solutions could be sought. I'll note that this really never happened, the 2012 process started, that other than the changes that were made in for the brand TLDs in Specification 13 and in Specification 9, which recognized an exemption to the Code of Conduct, basically the requirement of using only ICANN accredited registrars is still in effect, and only limited exceptions is the registry able to do registrations directly, which is for the 100 promotional names, or is the registrar able to discriminate in favor of one or a few registrars in the case of brand TLDs. So what recommendations does this group have at this point in time? There were a number of proposals that were discussed, and some had felt that they should go into their preliminary recommendations part of this report. I'll tell you that the leaders, that Cheryl and I, felt that some of these proposals weren't really discussed in enough detail to put them into the preliminary recommendation, but we did therefore put them all into Section D, which are options. What are the options that were under consideration along with the associated benefits? And so we list those options in Section D, which include the, to give one more element that was discussed as an issue, was the ability of registrars to, or the inability of some registrars to deal with in every currency, or registries to deal with in every currency. And so some of the proposals that came up were that ICANN could select a last resort wholesale registrar that would provide resellers with the ability to sell TLDs that lack market interest. In order to not burden ICANN, that for initial deposits, only registries allowing post-payment terms would be eligible for this resource. There's a discussion in above there in Yeah, it is. Okay, sorry, I forgot where it was, but it is actually in Section B, going back up, a discussion on what prepayment versus postpayment is and what registry models there are. So this option deals with that discussion that's above in Section B. Other recommendations in theory are that ICANN could provide a clearinghouse for payments. Third option is some assistance in for smaller registries to allow the registries to initially do registrations on their own, and then only then, after once they quote get off the ground, would they be required to use ICANN accredited registrars. The applicant guidebook could encourage potential applicants to communicate with ICANN accredited registrars before submitting an application, so that the applicants can understand any market issues. And then some members of the working group also propose that the registry contract should bundle the capacity of becoming an ICANN accredited registrar. In other words, include one of the things that ICANN said and the registrars have said is that the registrar accreditation agreement contains a number of important protections for registrants, and that's why you need to use only accredited registrars. So some have proposed, well, why don't you take those provisions that's in the registrar accreditation agreement, put them into the registry agreement, and therefore you're taking care of the registrants in that one agreement. Again, these are brainstorming ideas that came out of the session. They are options, and they are all options that we are seeking feedback on. Christopher, please. Christopher, you may still be on mute. Christopher, are you there?
Okay. Jeff, I have quite a lot to say about this, and I will almost certainly be writing a short paper for the list, because I'm quite sure you don't want to listen to me for about 20 minutes now. But first of all, in my experience in observing this over the past 10 years, the problem arises essentially because you have this combination of specification 19 and the vertical integration decision in the way it was turned out, which has created a number of these problems. I think that needs to be revisited because as the present situation cannot be allowed to reproduce itself in the rest of the world, where notably in areas where the registrar coverage is weak. Regarding the text in front of us at the bottom of the first page, no page numbers, staff, at the bottom of the first page, I've been exposed to questions of structural separation in the past. I think it would be justified to ask for a footnote or another paragraph explaining how structural separation in the first round has been audited and reported upon. I think it's potentially extremely difficult. When I look at the business model of somebody like Donuts, it boggles the mind how they would organize structural separation in that context. I think we need to know a lot more about how structural separation has been audited. In the middle of the next page, there's this prepayment business. I have no problems with prepayment in principle. After all, that's exactly how the .eu registry got launched in 2006. But here it says that registrars establish deposit accounts for each TLD. Now, that's okay if there's one TLD, but take a company that has 50 TLDs and is dealing with 100 registrars. Does that mean that the registrars together have to pay 5,000 prepayment deposits? That's wrong. Companies who have more than one TLD will have to bundle the prepayments. Otherwise, they're really squeezing the market. I have a few other comments, but that's all I want to say just now. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Christopher. And please do, if you could submit those in writing, that would be great. Just a note, and maybe we should put this in the text, that registries were free to establish whichever model they wanted to establish, or still are free to establish whatever model, as long as it's provided in accordance with the rest of the agreement, so as long as it's equal access and all that other. So, you know, how registries choose to do it, whether it's per TLD or per group of TLDs, is certainly not something that's currently regulated in the agreements at this point. But it's certainly good to get comments back from some registries on what they do, and perhaps comments on the different models that are being suggested. So in addition to just commenting on the proposal, brainstorming options, I should call them, are there any other, we're asking in Section E, if there are any other proposals or ideas that others in the public have to make things a bit more palatable for the smaller registries. Should ICANN even have a role? Is an interesting question that some have brought up. You know, is it within ICANN's mission, bylaws, or mandate that ICANN even provide any form of assistance with registries or registrars? And one of the interesting areas that was discussed certainly in Panama was, okay, so let's say we do come up with some proposals for these registrars with low market performance or things that can aid them. How do we identify which registries would qualify for such assistance? And so that's going to be something that the working group would like some feedback on. Any other questions on what's in here? I do want to stress that there is a deliberation section here that talks a little bit more in depth about some of these proposals and options. And please do, as Christopher said, he's going to submit some comments in writing. If you could, that would be great, so we could update this this section. And speaking of updates, since there's no further comments, on Friday we sent around a revised, a second reading, I guess, for sections 1.1 through 1.4, which have the edits that we made based on the comments. So I don't know if staff, if you can put that up on the Adobe screen, or whether that's, I think we've done a little bit more than we may have thought that we would get through, so I'm not sure. Do we have a version that you guys could put up? Okay, good. Great. So if you look up on the screen right now, there should be, now I'm just trying to look to make sure this has all of the edits, because this looks like a clean version for the most part. Oh, okay, there are some edits. Let me just look at my own copy of this, and you may want to look at your own copy, because I'm not sure Adobe is actually displaying everything. Steve, is Adobe displaying the comments that were on this too? Steve, please. Steve, you may be on mute.
Sorry. Thanks for that, Jeff. This is Steve from staff. And so the way I understand is, so actually this document that you're looking at in the Adobe Connect screen and what was shared on the agenda email, it's intended to take the input received on the two calls. So I wouldn't really expect it to have comments in line, so to speak. It should basically be red lines to take and capture input received. So I don't think you'd expect to see too many comments on the side. It should mostly just be the red lines. Hope that helps. Thanks.
Yes, thanks, Steve. Okay. I know that sometimes when we put it up on Adobe, it's if there are comments, it doesn't always print it, but okay, cool. So really, if we look at this section 1.1, and this deals with the, just to go back to the subject matter, to refresh everyone, it's auctions, mechanisms of last resort, which is really dealing with the ICANN auctions and basically everything kind of leading up to that ICANN, I'll call it a public auction, and that the results are all made public and that the money goes, at least for this last round, went to the specific fund that there's a now a cross-community working group that is considering what to do with this money. So really, the only changes that came out of the discussion were in the deliberation section, which that's section F, starting on page 3, where we talk about the working group discuss the possibility of having basically a request for proposals that could be used to resolve contention sets. Such an approach could potentially involve third-party evaluators. So remember, this was the case of re-looking back at whether auctions were or are the most appropriate way to, as a last resort, to resolve contention sets. This is not dealing with the private auctions at this point, but just the main one. And so one of those options, right, as was looked at before the last round, was doing a qualitative analysis to resolve contention sets. So that change was made to just reflect the discussion that you could do a request for proposals process, or that we discussed the potential of using a request for proposals process that involved third-party evaluators. Sarah, please.
Thanks. Thanks, Jeff. Sarah Langstone for the record. So my comment really refers to how we might consider managing contention resolution across the board. So by default, it kind of includes both last resort auctions and private auctions. But I'm now of a mind that a draw might be the fairest way of resolving all of these contentions, and maybe a deliberation draw or something like that could take a lot of the unresolved issues off the table. So first of all, if the contended TLDs were awarded by a draw, then you wouldn't have to be the applicant with the deepest pockets to win the rights to operate a TLD, which has been a concern for some of us as we've talked through this. Secondly, a draw would deter folks from participating in the program just to make money or fund themselves by losing private auctions, because there'd be no financial benefit for losing an auction. And thirdly, it would avoid comparative evaluation, sometimes known as beauty contests, you know, which again, several of us have expressed concerns about, because you wouldn't have to worry about a TLD being awarded subjectively. So as I read this, and the more that I thought about it, I thought that a draw could actually be the fairest way of resolving contentions whilst preserving fairness. I understand that some publicly traded companies have expressed some problems participating in a draw, but I seem to think that most of us were able to resolve that when we participated in the prioritization draw earlier on in the program. So at this stage, with so many open issues around auctions and contention resolution, And I have to say that, you know, I would be in favor of contentions being resolved by a draw, because it would appear to be simple, effective, and fair. And although it doesn't solve all of the open issues, I think it does get us closer to solving many of them.
Thanks, Sarah. I'm just looking at this deliberation section. Do we even have anything in there on a draw? I thought we did a randomization process. I'm just trying to look. And while I'm looking, does anyone else have any comments on that proposal or that option, I should say? Assuming we could get around the potential lottery implications of a California corporation doing this by draw, which, again, would probably be similar to the, as Sarah said, the issues that we were able to work through for the prioritization. Ruben says, I guess, what if you filed 100 applications to the same TLD? So I'm assuming, not to put words in anyone's mouth, but I'm assuming that there probably would be a limit of one application per company. Again, how you do that is interesting. Trang asks, Does your suggestion for a draw apply to all contentions, including where there are two community applications for the same string? So just to reword that, Sarah, you're talking about basically having that as the ultimate last resort. You'd still have the community prioritization, but if there were two communities that qualified or anything else, it would still... So that's where you would do the draw, but you would still have the community prioritization before you would do a draw.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Correct. Okay, thanks, Sarah. Jim is saying, judging by the last round, it's hard to see more than one community getting through. That may be the case, Jim. So does anybody else have any comments on that? I mean, it was an idea that was not fully examined, I think, in the last round, I think probably because of the lottery concern. But assuming we can get around those, anyone have any thoughts? Great. So what I would then propose is we will put in the... let's see, if we go back up to section, I don't want to bury that in the deliberations because I do think it's important to get feedback on. So I would put that in the, at the very minimum, options considered. So let's see, if we go to page... Sorry, page 2. Do we put that in the... Now, why don't we put... at least put that in the options in section D, because this is just raised on a call. For now, we'll put it in part D, and then we'll seek feedback on that in part E. And depending on comments... because from the last discussions that we've had, it seems that most were in favor of keeping auctions as a last resort in place. But I do think that this, you know, depending on comments we get in the next couple weeks, at least we should put this in Part D and then ask a question on it in Part E. And Jim agrees, just put it in the report. Let's see what the community thinks in a way it does neatly cover many of the concerns raised about both types of auctions. Okay. Any other comments? Thanks, Sarah. I think that was a great ad. And we will make sure that that's in the next version. Still drawing people's attention to the, just to show some changes we made, in the deliberation section, page 3 at the bottom, it says one working group member suggested a system of graduated fees. And so we added a paragraph on that. We also added a sentence at the end of the next paragraph on another working group member stated the process developed in 2012 was carefully designed to avoid the beauty contests. And then finally we added at the very end of that section two paragraphs on discussing the issue of auction proceeds and the relationship of the auction proceeds work and the impact on this working group's perspective on the role of auctions. So there was at least one member that suggested that depending on the recommendations of the auction proceeds cross-community working group, if the community, depending on those recommendations, that may impact how some members of this group feel about whether to recommend auctions in the future. So we added that as in the deliberation section. Okay, we are still seeking feedback on that section, as all of them, so please do make sure you get your comments in. I will thank some working group members that have already submitted or that had submitted comments that have hopefully contributed to these sections of the supplemental initial report. We go to 1.2. Now, this is specific with private auctions, so assuming it's not a draw model and assuming that public auctions are the way forward, or I should say ICANN auctions are the, or is the mechanism for last resort, then this section is dealing with private auctions, so those that resolve these contention sets privately through an auction provider where the funds are generally distributed amongst the contention set as opposed to the community. And so here, the changes that we've made to this section, to the preliminary recommendations, a number of working group members expressed concern, so it wasn't a, before we had it worded as the working group, and so we note here that it's some members of the working group expressed concern, or a number of them. We have also, in the deliberation section, made a series of changes. So starting on page 8, we note that some working group members considered private auctions to be a form of game in the system, that they believed it was a defect in the program that did not serve the public interest. Those who opposed restrictions on private auctions pointed out that there is currently no data supporting the idea that applicants submitted applications with the sole purpose of profiting from private auctions. I believe outreach to the private auction providers may be warranted. Just on that note, the leadership team is in the process of reaching out to the private auction providers to get some information from them to see if there were complaints that they had heard of from those that participated in the auctions. We would also encourage, if you all participated in these auctions or know of others that participated in the auctions, to please provide us with data. Please do send it to the full group. There was one person that had submitted something to the leadership team, and I need to get back to that person, that pointed to an article that was published. I'm going to ask that person to publish that to the full list, so that everyone can see those comments and then see what kind of alleged, what kind of allegations there were. So that should be, we'll make sure that gets to the full list so everyone can see that. But if you do have any feedback, please do provide it. Also from the discussions we added some paragraphs on page 8, raising concerns of the reputational harm that private auctions could bring to ICANN. Some working group members stated they don't support restricting the use of private auctions, that they think it's not appropriate to abridge the freedom of parties to privately resolve as they see fit. And from another perspective, even if it were desirable and possible to restrict private auctions, this would not prevent one applicant in the contention set from paying another member of a contention set to withdraw an application, which might be similar to a private auction. So these were some comments that we have had that were raised that we have added to the deliberations section. Any other comments or questions on this? Okay, obviously this is provided on Friday, so you have plenty of time. Please do review this and get us your other comments. Section 1.3, this is the role, what role do comments to the application play, and what recommendations do we have for on public comments and their role. The changes we made here in this section were in section E, so that's on page 11 of the document. We question that we're seeking feedback on. So in the first question, if the working group noted that while there is a cutoff for application comments to be considered by evaluators, the cutoff for community priority evaluation is far later in the process, allowing for much longer period of time for comments to be received. The longer period of time allowed was due to the timing of CPE. Is this or other factors valid reasoning and or fair to have the comment period for CPE extend longer than for initial evaluation? So, Jamie, you have your hand raised. This was in response to, I think, your comments. Please.
Yeah, Jamie Baxter for the record. Not actually in response to the adjustments that were made, but after another read-through, I came across a concern with how the opening sentence of the last paragraph in the deliberation section is framed. For some reason, the point is framed as, quote, one working group member raised a concern about the public comment period for community applications, end quote. As a reminder, I'm probably the only participant in this group that is from the community application side, so that's a weird framing. But it is true that I am one member, and I did raise the concern. However, the transcript shows that dialogue on this topic and some shared concern was registered. So I just don't want the record to appear or improperly suggest that the concern was unshared or unsupported within the working group. I think the record should properly state that the working group members raised and discussed the topic as it does with preceding paragraphs in the deliberation section. Thanks.
Thank you, Jamie. I think that's a good, fair suggestion, so we will revise that accordingly. Just for the record, that is page 12 of 18. That is the paragraph just before G, so it's in section F. The last paragraph states one working group member raised concerns, so it's in that paragraph there. Jamie, is that correct? That's the paragraph you're talking about?
Correct, yes, the last paragraph in the deliberation section.
Great. Okay, thanks, Jamie. Any other questions or comments? Okay, and then to the section that we discussed, 1.4, on the last call, change requests. There really wasn't many comments that we received on this one that would change any of the recommendations, but we did get additional questions in section E. So if you look at page 16 of 18, this is under the topic that says section D outlines above possible changes that could be allowed in subpro and corresponding implementation guidance. And so the first question is, do you agree with these types of changes or with allowing these types of changes? Why or why not? And we've added a sentence here. It says, the implementation guidance asks that ICANN provide better clarity on what types of changes will or will not be allowed and also what changes may require reevaluation. Do you have suggestions on how to provide more precise guidance? Would this guidance replace or complement the 7 criteria, which are talked about in Section B above? So do you have any comments or to complement or replace that guidance that was provided by ICANN in 2012, I think it was? And then finally, there's in the deliberation section, there's somewhere basically towards the middle on page 17, a working group member had expressed concerns about the details of joint ventures, and you probably saw a couple emails. I know that there was an email sent, and then I attempted to respond to that in my personal capacity, so please do look at that so we can make sure that that's included in this deliberation section. I don't know if people are tired. Okay, just going back to the chat. So Jim put a comment in. Okay, thanks, Jim. You had pointed out an article. Jim had sent that to Cheryl and I. But now he's pointing it out to the list. This is an article that was, I believe, put out by VeriSign, I think, or on Afilias. And then I think there was a response. Jonathan has put that a response out on that Circle ID link. So if you all want to look at those and to see whether you have any comments on those and whether that would change any of the material in here or add, I shouldn't say just change, but you want to add material here on that based on these articles. Of course, additional feedback is welcome. So if you want to provide those, if you participated in private or public auctions for that matter, the ICANN process, please do provide us with any input that you'd like us to include in this report. Okay, I think we have gotten through all of this. Obviously, we just went through our first reading of 1.5, so we're not going to go through any revisions at this point in time. So I will open us up for any other business. What I probably should say is that I have seen a revised draft of the ICANN 63 schedule. I can't remember whether that was I saw it on the GNSO council list or where I saw it, but I believe it still has our group meeting on the first day, Saturday, so work track 5 being much of the morning and work tracks 1 through 4 being the afternoon. And Christina has noted that it is, unfortunately, because of the EPDP deciding to meet on the same day as all the GNSO working groups, there is a conflict between the EPDP and our sessions. That was unavoidable from our perspective, and we apologize for that, but we would appreciate the cardboard cutout of Christina in our meeting. Hopefully we can get that through customs okay. So sorry, Christina, or anybody else that has to participate in the EPDP. I wish we could have avoided that. But the good news is hopefully the EPDP will be done by the policy meeting next year, so we shouldn't have those conflicts again. Other than this year. And also, just as a preview, the plan for the, technically we have three sessions for WorkTracks 1 through 4. I say three sessions, it's really separated by breaks. And in those sessions, it's all the same day. The plan is to spend one of those going over the comments that we've received and having discussion, spending another one of those split out into the three subgroups, and then the third one is still a little bit up in the air as to what we're going to do, but our thinking is to potentially have a looking forward session, meaning, you know, what are the steps that more of an implementation type discussion, and inviting ICANN staff to that to talk about how we can work things in parallel, finishing up the group of this, finishing up the work of this group, while also starting implementation and discussing a little bit in advance how, with the council, of how we can set up an implementation review team, when we could set that up, and doing all of those things sort of in parallel. So that's the thinking for the three different sessions. There will be remote participation with the breakout groups. We are working through what the best way of doing that, but since we know that there's three subgroups, hopefully that'll make it easier to get three different remote participation rooms, or three different things set up. And I know ICANN staff is probably now shaking its head going, Jeff, don't make that promise, but we'll do our best to see if we can do that. Okay, any other business? Well, great. I will give everyone back a couple minutes on their time. Reminder, we do have a call next week, next Monday. So please do check the schedule. Thank you very much. Talk to you all next week.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, everyone. Bye for now.
Thank you so much. Meeting has been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recordings for us and disconnect all remaining lines. Have a great day, everyone.